Welcome to the D Word, the UK's only weekly internet radio show that talks dementia, with me, your host, Peter Hill. Welcome along, good to have you company again here on the D Word. Genetic frontotemporal dementia makes up to 8% of all dementia cases, and that's our focus this week with my guest, Susan Goen, whose partner Barbara was diagnosed with a condition. Susan has turned her experience of caring for Barbara into a book called Dancing in the Face of Death, and she'll be joining me right after this from 49 Winchester.
And I've had 100 I quit drinking yesterdays, and I'm starting to lose track of all the ways that I've let the people I love down, sinking deep in my hometown. I'm drowning. Well, I woke up today with bloodshot eyes, went to bed the same way, no surprise. I smashed a couple of Gatorades, it feels like a hand grenade, it's pounding. But I'm slowly growing up, slowly slowing down, I'm slowly shaking off the thoughts that trail me like a hound. Yes, I'm slowly toward the day my soul is glory bound. Yeah, I'm slowly but surely coming around. And I know how to walk a crooked line, straight and narrow gets me every time, like a camel through the needle's eye. Damn this sinful heart of mine, confounded. Oh, I don't deserve forgiveness or the grace you sheds on me. And as God is my witness, I swear I'm gonna make her see that I'm slowly growing up, slowly slowing down. I'm slowly shaking off the thoughts that trail me like a hound. And I'm slowly inching toward the day my soul is glory bound. Yeah, I'm slowly but surely coming around. And I'm slowly growing up, slowly slowing down. I'm slowly shaking off the thoughts that trail me like a hound. Yes, I'm slowly inching toward the day my soul is glory bound. Yeah, I'm slowly but surely coming around. Yes, I'm slowly but surely coming around.
In Winchester and slowly kicking off this week's D Word, while my guest is Susan Goen. Susan, it's a real pleasure to welcome you as my guest here on the D Word. Going to be talking about your book, Dancing in the Face of Death.
Thank you.
It was about your partner, Barbara, who was diagnosed with frontotemporal dementia.
That's right.
But before we get into the book and everything, I mean, tell us a little bit about Barbara.
Well, that would be my pleasure. So Barbara was one of the most vibrant, engaged people I've ever known, for sure. She was a singer. She had a beautiful voice with a great range, and was part of a quintet for many years that performed all over Maine in the States where we lived. And a big gardener and a knitter and just a really interesting person and friend. And She was the daughter of a woman who also had GRN FTD, the version that creates the behavioral variant. And unfortunately, that gene has dominated in her mother's side of the family. So her aunt, her cousin, her brother have all also had the gene. And as you know, it's when it's genetic, there's a risk of future generations. So one of the reasons I wrote the book is she asked me to. So that's the kind of person that she was. She said we could help people, and I'm donating the proceeds to the University of Pennsylvania FTD Center for Research. So I'm hoping that many people will want to read it and that we can find a cure through the research that it will fund.
Yeah, absolutely. And we second that. I mean, I guess it must have been difficult for you at times that if you do have a partner that has a genetic risk of an illness, it's almost, looking under the microscope at times for little signs, I guess.
Yes, you're absolutely right. So when we got together, and we were together for 42 years, so we were young, we were in our late 20s. It wasn't 3 months of us being together, when she introduced me to her family. And it was on that occasion that we found out that her mother was having some kind of brain challenges. Of course, this was in the early 80s. And so FTD was not even a concept back then, but they diagnosed her mother with a dementia of unknown histology, they called it at the time, meaning it's some kind of dementia, but we don't know what it is or how it is originating. And then when her aunt followed a few years later, we began to suspect that it was genetic. And so, yes, it was a, well, we tried to not make it be a Damocles sword over our heads. We tried to just live the best life possible, and we did. You know, we traveled, we worked hard, we did all those things, we enjoyed life. But you're right, when you're part of a genetic family with a rare brain disorder, it's constantly a part of your life.
And I guess for you, when the time came, you started noticing things that perhaps, let's be fair, perhaps you didn't want to see, but
Right,
it's very difficult.
Yes, you're so right, Pete. You know, it's Barbara's mother manifested the symptoms at the age of 56 because some of your viewers might not know, but frontotemporal dementia is the kind of dementia that hits early. It used to be confused with early onset Alzheimer's for that reason. And so it hits early. It can be in your 40s, even younger, but 40s, 50s are not uncommon. And Barbara did a lot of what is now referred to as cognitive loading tasks. So she learned multiple languages. She learned to read music, which she hadn't done before. She just used her brain as much as she possibly could. And perhaps the research shows that it's probable that that was a factor, that her symptoms did not emerge until her later 60s. And I will say that for both of us, because of that, Barbara in particular thought she was not going to have the disorder, that it had skipped her. I was not willing to let my guard down, I guess, just because I felt it was my responsibility to be the one that paid attention in case it did manifest. And yet, I believe I missed some things about a year before. I couldn't not see what I was seeing in terms of the changes that she was showing in her behavior, in her personality. Yeah.
And
But you don't want to see what you don't want to see, right? Yeah.
absolutely, yeah. And taking the other way around, from Barbara's perspective, do you think that she had started to notice those things as well, but didn't want to tell you?
I do think that, and the reason I do is that one of the signs, and this is what I was referring to when I said I missed it, was she had stopped doing a number of the things that had really been, personal hobbies, passions of hers, because I think she realized that she wasn't able to do them in the way that she had been able to. So, for example, she wasn't knitting as much, and she had been an avid knitter. She wasn't cooking as much, and people don't think about it, but she was you would say an amateur chef. So she cooked complex dishes, and she wasn't able to do the planning and preparation and the kind of thinking it through. And I missed that too. I thought she just had decided she didn't want to cook anymore, and kept saying, "Well, let's just go out to dinner," because she had been the primary cook at the time. So I think she did know, but of course, the more the disease advances, the one of the features of FTD is because you're losing your prefrontal, cortex, your neurons in your frontal lobe, you lose the ability to really know yourself. But I think in the early stages, she had a hint of it for sure.
Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
The station that makes you feel good.
Is the moon shining bright where you are? Is it even shining at all? Running like a white line down the middle of some old memory. Does the evening unfolding waves, the desire to be nowhere or to go out and rage, like a time when it was more than just some old memory. When you miss someone, tears you apart and then some. When you miss someone, someone you love. Is the silence quiet or loud? A lifetime of questions, lost and profound, professing to a silhouette of trees on the ground here in front of me. When you miss someone, tears you apart and then some. When you miss someone, someone you love. Now it's here in your absence, my mind doing backflips, reserve tank running on E. Intergalactic, into the stat, searching for a memory. When you miss someone, miss someone tears you apart and then some. When you miss someone, someone you love. When you miss someone, someone you love. When you miss someone, someone you love. When you miss someone, someone you love.
The marvelous William Prince, and When You Miss Someone, here on the D Word, one of our host of weekly shows on UK Health Radio, covering almost every aspect of health. They're all available for listen again and download from the website at ukhealthradio.com. Genetic frontotemporal dementia is our focus this week, with my guest Susan Gowan. And when it comes to FTD, still, you know, I guess in the, so I talk to people all over the world. Here in the UK, I'm always being asked the question, what's the difference between Alzheimer's and dementia? And kind of, you know, it's still a little bit at that stage. But obviously with FTD, everybody still, or a lot of people still think, dementia, memory loss. Let's put them together. Right. But you're right. Dealing with a whole load of different stuff when it comes to FTD.
Oh, completely. Yes, it's very frustrating, actually, to be in a family with FTD because people really don't understand. And there are multiple manifestations of FTD, which makes it even more complex. So, for example, Barbara's mother lost language, so she must have had some aspects of aphasia, as well as the behavioral variant, the GRN-FTD. Barbara never lost language. The other thing is that most FTD persons living with FTD don't lose memory at all, and Barbara never did. Some will lose some short-term memory, but not consistently. And so, for example, there was never a time that Barbara couldn't talk about our whole history. You know, she would come talk about things that had happened 20 years ago, or she would happen to talk about things that happened, you know, earlier that morning. And it was only periodically that, and it was also during COVID. So it was kind of, none of us knew what day it was or what time it was, right? And so she would often say, so what day is it? And that never concerned me because 2 days later, she would know what day it was, you know? And so even the standard dementia tests, like who's the president and things like that, you know, most FTD patients can answer that. They have more trouble when it gets into the complex parts of a dementia assessment, like counting backwards by sevens. That manifests, you can see the decline in their ability to do things like that, for sure.
Yeah, it's you know, it's, some people say that the tests are blunt and you have to pick the right test for the yes. The right condition. But yes. let's take, you know, what we were talking about then. You were noticing things. You think Barbara was noticing things.
Yeah.
Tell me about when it all came together and you both had to realize what was going on.
Yes. So it's never easy to tell your beloved that they have a fatal genetic brain disorder. That is very clear. And so what was happening for me was that I was noticing more disturbing behaviors. You know, it's one thing for her to stop cooking and, you know, that we can deal with. But she was, really, showing apathy and starting to change some of her social one of the characteristics of behavioral variant is you lose your social inhibitions. And so she would say things that were blunt, sometimes hurtful to people. And that was so not her personality, so not the person she had ever been. She would not have any interest in contacting family or friends. And again, she was very connected to the people in her life. And that it was those kinds of social behavioral changes that made me realize that I had to tell her what I was seeing. So I couldn't figure out exactly when and how to do it. And for whatever reason, we had traveled a lot in our lives, and we had always had sort of serious life conversations when we were on vacation, I guess, because in some ways it was easier. I don't really know why, but that had been our practice. And so we went on a vacation, and I told her on the vacation, and again, characteristic of FTD, she said, "Oh, you're just, you know," she had, by then she had lost her sense of self analysis and ability to understand her self behavior. She said, "You're just paranoid." And I said, "No, I'm not paranoid." And I started giving her some concrete examples that I knew she had noticed. Like, she was not able, her penmanship had always been fantastic, and she was no longer able to write in a way that you could, it was starting to be illegible. And I knew that she had acknowledged that, and that disturbed her. And so I used a few of those kind of concrete examples. And finally, she said, "All right, well, what are we going to do about it?" So I knew she had accepted it. But it is difficult, because by the time, as a care partner, you're sure that the person has what you think they have, often they're in a state where they can not accept it. And so it can get pretty challenging to get someone to even agree to go to a doctor and get an assessment. Luckily, she did. The challenge is it took 8 months to get into a neurologist. So we don't have enough resources to help when we need them.
And I guess that's a time period where you're thinking, I know what the problem is. Barbara's in another area.
Yes.
And I guess, you spent 8 months thinking, wow, almost. And it's kind of, you must have been put in a really strange position, because you're almost thinking, well, I hope I'm right.
Right.
But you don't want to be.
Right. I know. It is absolutely true. In fact, that's one of the lines that I wrote in my book, is this is one time in my life I don't want to be right.
The road under your feet is dark and feels wrong, and you find yourself lost, and all your confidence is gone, and the stars over your head through the clouds won't be revealed. I'll walk with you, even if it's uphill. When the weight of your troubles sends your knees into the dirt, and all your loyal distractions only magnify the hurt. When lonesome doesn't quite define how so alone you feel, I'll walk with you, even if it's uphill. Hard times and landslides, a part of life, I know. Like they say, none of us get out alive. But every ocean you're swimming across, however valley low, whatever mountains you climb. I'll walk with you, even if it's uphill. Blessed are the times filled with sons, surrounded by your friends. Those days when all the new roads wait right where the old roads end. Or should you wake up to every stride outside your windowsill, I'll walk with you, even if it's uphill. Hard times and landslides, a bottle I've got knows. We all got some mountains to climb. Whatever ocean you're swimming across, however valley low, I'm right here, I've been right here all this time. Even if it's uphill, I'll walk with you, even if it's uphill.
Laurie McKenna and Abel. Genetic FTD is one of the rarer forms of dementia and is our focus this week with my guest, Susan Goin, who has turned her experience of caring for her partner Barbara into a new book, Dancing in the Face of Death. Yeah, I think that is so true. And I think the other thing you said, which was so true, is to have those kind of conversations that we require. Going on a vacation or somewhere, that's where you have them, because, day-to-day life is just something happens, the doorbell rings, whatever, and you can't do it.
Exactly. Too many routines that are in place and there's not the space for it. And so it requires space to have that conversation. I mean, it took a while to get to the place where she accepted what I was saying. I'm sure it's been true for others as well.
Sure, yeah, absolutely. I mean, so you had your 8-month wait. You've now got to see the neurologist. Take us on a bit further. What happened then?
So there's a number of assessments that have to be done in order to determine accurately and positively as to whether FTD is present and also which type. So the process started with a very in-depth neuropsychology, cognitive behavioral assessment. And that really, really upset Barbara, because she was clearly, if you will, failing the test. And so that hit her very hard, sent her into a short depression, because as she said to me, I've always been a good student and I've always passed all the tests I've ever taken, and I don't think I passed this one. And that broke my heart, you know. It was clear that she was, finally and fully recognizing. And because she had had so many members of her family already go through this, and we had gone through those difficult processes together of the family members' decline, I think it just all came to a head with her realizing that she was on the same path. And then she had an MRI, and the MRI was, of course, the definitive. She never had to do a PET scan, which a lot of people do, because her MRI showed a large loss of brain cells in her frontal cortex. And so the neurologist, who also happened to be a geneticist, which is one of the reasons I chose her, said you should take a genetics test to define which form of FTD you have. And so Barbara was actually the first one in her family who had a definitive GRN FTD diagnosis.
That's that's interesting in itself. And I guess that family history and the knowledge that you gained from that family history was good, but not so good. Because, you understood what was going on, but you were also seeing where it was going.
Yes. It, in a sense, the benefit of it was that I was diligent, even though the early signs are so subtle, you can easily miss them. But when I saw the more evident ones, particularly in her case, as I said, the apathy and the planning losses that life requires of us, and decision making and things like that that get lost with BVFTD, you know what you're looking at. And so you can get diagnosed and start a treatment, well, it's not really treatment, but you can start exploring ways to manage it better. And in our case, the other benefit was we found a clinical trial for her to join. So that's the positive side. The negative side is once you recognize that this person, they themselves recognize or you recognize as their loved one, that they are at the beginning of that path, you have way too much knowledge and understanding of what that path entails.
Yeah, I think I saw, I looked at one of your posts on LinkedIn and you mentioned the concept of anticipatory grief.
Yes.
I think is, what you're talking about there.
Yeah, the anticipatory grief is for the carers, the people who care for the person with FTD, is I would say the most difficult part of the whole process, because you know you're losing this person every day, more and more of them. And you know that it's a fatal disease. And so, in that sense, it's like people with ALS, right? Whose family members go through the same thing. And we now know FTD ALS is on a spectrum. So it's very similar in that regard. And it is by far the worst part.
Yeah, certainly true. So, in terms of the research, I guess from Barbara's point of view, sadly, you're in the position where you're not going to get out of this, but also
right.
You've got the ability to still, while you're around, make a difference and
yes.
Hopefully push that research on.
Yes, and thank you for commenting on that, Pete, because I feel passionately about the importance of anyone diagnosed with FTD to see what research is being done and to participate in it. We can't change the state of this kind of rare brain disorder if we don't help scientists study it, help them try different therapies and treatments. And yes, some will fail. The treatment that she received was very promising, but we run into, these are companies that want to ultimately make money from the drugs. In our case, the FDA has some strict guidelines about when you move into a phase 3 placebo treatment research design. And it's in my opinion really inhumane to think of that kind of a research design when you're talking about a progressive fatal disease. But nonetheless, we run into those issues. And still, I'm very passionate that Barbara being in the clinical trial was worth it. It gave her a longer and more positive experience in her life. She felt she was contributing. She was very proud of that. It takes a lot of courage, but it's worth the effort. And so I would plead with anyone and everyone in FTD families to participate in any research available to you to advance the search for a cure. And I would also add, because Barbara's family has been doing this since the 90s, to donate your brain to science as well upon your death. We need the scientists to help us figure this out.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, you know, the difficulty with dementia research in general is that it's behind, way behind other, you know, diseases.
Yes.
And if you're looking at FTD, which is a rarer form of dementia,
exactly,
you're kind of even further behind, sadly.
Yes, it's part of the problem is having enough research participants because it's rare, and that's why I'm actually pleading for everyone to get involved, because we truly need the numbers, or the scientists, and of course the drug companies are, you know, not going to pursue the study of this disease if we don't step up and participate.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
The station that makes you feel good.
Yeah, and that's a, you know, really important message. I think, you know, dementia in general, but particularly FTD. I mean, what's, you know, you're in the States, I'm here in the UK. General understanding of FTD still in, you know, in terms of just normal people, would people know what FTD is?
No, they absolutely don't know what it is. We've had a little bit more awareness raised in the United States because Bruce Willis, a very famous, you know, actor from the States, has unfortunately been diagnosed with the disease, and his wife has been a huge champion of advancing the understanding. You really, his fame is enabling her to do that, to let more people know and to advance both some regulatory changes as well as more research. It often takes that kind of situation to raise awareness, and but I would say it's still very unknown. I mean, most of our friends, I had to explain to it, you know, to them what it was. So,
what was the kind of reaction you got when you explained it?
You know, I'm happy to say that we have an amazing group of friends. And when I explained some of the conditions that would start appearing, and particularly the loss of social graces, you know, you could expect some very odd behavior to come out. One of my friends wrote back and said, well, Barbara has more social graces than most people I've ever met, so she could afford to lose half of hers and still be better than most people. And I just thought that was a great indication of people's ability to continue to love someone even, you know, as they change.
Yeah, and I think hit the right note at the right time as well.
Yes.
as that was. There was another bit.
Yes.
I saw from you on LinkedIn saying that speaking about what you went through reminded you how much caregivers carry. And
yes.
You know, that's a really resonant point wherever you are caring for someone.
Yes, I will say the caregiver role is society underestimates how caregivers are holding up our society because it is the most challenging job I've ever had. As much as my love for Barbara made me want to take on that role and to do it, to the best of my ability, it's a humbling experience, especially when you're dealing with dementia. The person is changing. You have to find new communication strategies, even when you've been with someone for decades. The old ones don't work. You have to have the patience of Job, as we say, to understand that, for example, at the apathy is not directed toward you. The person does still care. So you have to carry a lot of maturity in the process and not take things personally. And in my case, I'll just say, I didn't find it challenging to manage the extra sort of life tasks that she used to do some of and that I was willing to take on. But it is true that losing the person that you have had such a close connection to while you're delivering care takes its own form of courage and intentionality and, a deep love in order to be able to do it for a long period of time, because it is a typically a long period of time. In Barbara's case, her decline, her death came earlier than most, but I watched her father care for her mother for almost a decade. So it's a marathon. It's not a sprint.
Yeah, absolutely true. And also, I think it takes a lot of courage to, a lot of people, when they've gone through what you've gone through, they might say, well, I just want to close the box on that. That's it. That was all over. But, you've put it into print here. You've opened up the world, which I think is a really brave thing to do.
Again, that's very kind of you, Pete. Barbara asked me to write a book about it. And so how could I turn her down, right? She said, you should write a book about what we're going to go through. And I remember distinctly saying to her, I don't think it's going to be a pretty picture. I'm not sure why you want me to do that. And she's very specifically said, if you can do it and it will help people. And so that's our intention, that people will see that as challenging as the process is, that you can, stay connected, be in love, have joy throughout the whole process. And this story, I think, is it may not sound it, but I think is uplifting. And so I hope people will read it in honor of Barbara, and the courage that she showed.
Yeah, and I think courage that both of you showed in
Thank you.
producing it. Let's do the nuts and bolts bit. When's it out, and
Sure.
where can we get it?
Sure. So again, the title is Dancing in the Face of Death. The subtitle is A Journey of Love, Caregiving, and Courage Amid a Dementia Diagnosis. You can buy it on Amazon on June 2nd. It's a Tuesday, so a random Tuesday. But if you go on June 2nd and order it via Amazon, my hope is it will become an Amazon bestseller because, again, I'm donating the proceeds to the University of Pennsylvania FTD Center where Barbara was treated, and they are in the forefront of doing research for the cure. So I hope you'll join us in making this a big hit so that we can get to that point of solving this very challenging brain disorder.
Well, go out and buy it. That's all I can say.
Yes,
Susan,
thank
it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much sharing you and Barbara's story. And I wish you every success with the book and the continuing fight to continue research into FTD. Thanks for being my guest.
Well, thank you for inviting me. And I'm definitely still doing the fight. So we'll see each other, I'm sure, along the way.
Thanks so much to Susan. The book Dancing in the Face of Death is out from June 2nd, available from all major booksellers, with all proceeds going to the Ben FTD Centre to advance research. That's all for this week. Thanks to my production assistant, Angela. Next week, my guest will be Dr. Saskia Sabanathan, founder and CEO of the Brainwell Institute in Canada. So until then, thanks for listening and take care now.